This is episode one of Activate with Dwight Bain. My name is Eric English. In each episode, we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you reach your greatest goals. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let's begin. The infamous Dwight Bain. Dwight, thank you so much.
I'm really glad.
This is awesome.
And I'm really glad that we have an opportunity, and I'm really excited too, because by being able to share ideas across new media platforms, that's the future, and you're part of it. I'm glad to be on the journey.
Absolutely. I had you share on a separate note your bio, so we're not going to get into that today. I just want to say again that you've been a great friend over the years, and I don't think you remember, but the first time that we had any interaction was in Lake County, in Mount Dora, around the time that you had your first book. I think it was your first book.
I remember
at
that.
At the Chamber event.
Yes.
Lake Reception.
Yes. I remember because I think that was a new building back then.
It was brand new at the time.
And I was talking about the seven secrets of having and building a successful life.
That's right.
Because it's really built around a series of daily routines. Most people, if you ask them, do you want to be successful? They go, yeah, absolutely. If you said, define it for me, they just get the deer in the headlights look because they haven't defined it. If you can't define it, you're not going to accomplish it. And so that book was a way to say, these are some coaching principles to be able to walk through so that you can have a better quality of life.
And if I remember, faith-based too, right? It was faith-based and business practices.
It was. You know, one of the things I believe in is core values. Any successful person that you talk to has something that they believe in. It's that belief that drives them. In fact, that's one of the core principles of the book. Now, that belief for some people may be a strong belief in God. For others, they may have a Jewish background and they worship God in a different way. But you have to know what you believe because that's what keeps you going in the tough times. And Eric, there's a bunch of tough times, especially if people are in small business. You know, it's almost like a battlefield. And if you know why you're in it, kind of the Simon Sinek idea, start with why. You'll keep going. You'll have perseverance. You'll have what Angela Duckworth calls grit, that perseverance, that resilience of saying, I'm going to stick with this because I know why we brought our product or our service to the marketplace. Here's what I believe, and we're going to keep doing it. That's what keeps us going, is that core belief.
Well, going back to routines, as business owners, as creatives, entrepreneurs, and people that just want to create a little bit of breathing room in life. What talk to us about routines and how important that is, but yet also how creatives, we sometimes think that chaos is great, but why is that not good?
Well, I'm going to start with that part and then I'm going to come back to the routines because many people have grown up in an environment. If they're like me, somebody who was diagnosed at a point in their life by a doctor who says, you know what? This isn't creativity. This is attention deficit disorder. Right. In 1991, I was part of a writer's group with one of the biggest publishing houses in the United States. And after about 18 months, they kicked me out because they said, you're too scattered. And I didn't understand that with some creative people, you know, in my case, that my brain pathways go in a lot of different directions. And by being able to learn some patterns and some routines, and for some people, medicine's part of that. Mm-hmm. In fact, Dr. Daniel Amen, a classic researcher, he's the best researcher on this subject. You know, Dr. Amen is the guy who has the TED Talk, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life. Mm-hmm. And by being able to build some routines, right? And so we're taking that creativity from a wide approach to a very narrow approach. If you've ever been whitewater rafting, you know that if you're on a wide river like the St. John's, it doesn't go fast. There's current, but it's not fast. But if that channel narrows, that's when you see the white water. That's when you see the speed. And so for a creative, we want some daily routines and some daily patterns. Mm-hmm. People say, well, I'll get better work done if I wait until, you know, midnight the night before. No, you'll get desperate work done. It won't be your best work.
Sure.
It'll be desperate, not your best.
That's so true.
And so the people who are able, in my world, as business writers, who crank out book after book, many of them over 100 books, they have daily patterns. You know, you get up, you have a healthy breakfast. You make sure you've got, you know, 7, 8, 9 hours of sleep the night before. Healthy breakfast. You have a meditative time, what Bill Hybels calls the daily 15. And then you have some type of exercise, something to kind of get your breath and your blood going.
Right.
Right. And then somewhere you say, here's my best creative time. Now, for some people, it's going to be in the morning. Some people, it's mid-morning. Some people, it's lunchtime. Once you know your most creative time, but I want people to
into that.
Yeah. If you'll build your routines about that, mm-hmm. and you'll say, I need to get 3,000 words done by lunchtime. And you just, like a friend of mine who's written a little over 60 books, several of the New York Times bestsellers.
Right.
It sounds kind of crude, but he said, put your butt in a chair and write. You know, it's not pretty, it's not fancy, but the creative process, if I can build around those routines, then the neuroplasticity of my brain, those brain pathways, will start to flow along with, okay, this human's got some structure. And then inside of that structure, we can create some really cool stuff. But it's not out of desperation. It's coming out of a daily discipline. And it's that purpose. Discipline that allows you to be able to create and build and do year after year after year. Mm-hmm. Not desperation. You'll burn out. Discipline. You'll have a sustainable model and you'll be able to really, I think, not just be creative, but enjoy the journey.
Well, that's very, very good. Now, okay. So going from that into this podcast being about creating, being activated, not just baking on ideas, not just going through routines, but so how do those routines, how do those daily practices lead to activating that greatness in your life? Because as creatives, that's the other problem we have, right? We get in this ideation phase, and when routine hits, we get burnt out. And what do we do again? Think of another good idea, right? Because we can't stick to that routine. So how, talk to us about activating and keeping to action, because sometimes action is more important than brainstorming new ideas.
It really is. There's a famous movie star who's, when he retired, they said, what was your secret to success? Woody Allen. And he said, right. 80% of my success was showing up, right? And so when I look at, you know, a creative has all these ideas, but there are a lot of people that have all these ideas, and yet they don't have any measurable, tangible results. Mm-hmm. Probably the best example in the course of American history in the last 100 years is Walt Disney. Super creative guy, but he had a brother named Roy Disney, and Roy Disney is why there's a Disney company. The studios were the Disney Brothers studio in the 1920s, about 100 years ago in Southern California. Because Walt had the creativity, Roy had the structure. And to be able to say, well, how does that apply to me? Mm-hmm. Eric, here's the creative, here's the coach. Right. So if the creative who has all these ideas and all this stuff, and, mm-hmm. and you're right, when there's pressure, it's easy for them to go to the next creative idea.
Sure.
And the coach is the one who's able to not criticize ever, because that crushes a creative. The coach comes alongside to critique. Do you think you could get better results if you did it this way? That creative soul needs a coach to be able to channel that and to be able to say, you said you'd have this number of pages done by this date. What's the roadblock? How can I come alongside? How can I help? And I found, Eric, particularly for millennials, you know, because they say, well, millennials are unmotivated. No, they're really creative. They're easily bored. And we solve boredom by being able to find something that a person's truly interested in. Absolutely. And then putting the structure.
Yeah.
Right. It has to be driven by, I'm interested in this because of, instead of, I'm doing this to make $15 an hour so I can pay for my car payment, mm-hmm. or pay rent. If somebody's doing it out of obligation, particularly if they're younger than 35 years old, they get bored very quickly. And so people who are criticizing millennials, oh, they're lazy. No, they're easily bored. But if I can find something they're interested in and I can provide coaching, they will startle you with their ability to come up with some fantastic ideas. Because the coach is helping them with the follow through.
Right. Coaches are super important. Mentors, people that will uplift, people that have been through the journey before.
Yeah.
Fear, the fear of failure. There are other fears in life. And there's a good example today that everybody knows, and that's Mark Zuckerberg with Facebook. And one thing he has with his employees and that he's had since he was in college was this unique ability to not care about breaking stuff. Not that he wants to break the whole Facebook environment, but he has these activities where he gets handfuls of users to test a certain product. And it's okay if it breaks, but he's about action. And let's break it. If we break it, we'll fix it. We won't break the whole infrastructure, but we'll break and we'll move forward. So I say that because talk to us about what that looks like for people that, and it is because of fear, whether that's fear of failure or fear that their product's not quite ready to take to the market. But some of the most successful products were taken to market way before they were ready.
Oh, absolutely. When you look back in the classic toys, the Slinky, right? You know, Slinky, oh, yeah. Slinky, everybody loves a Slinky. Yeah. There was a man who'd been a mechanic in World War II, and they had these springs that were not really effective, so they threw them away. He kept a box of them after World War II because they were just a low-grade spring,
awesome.
Right? And so he turned it into a toy for his children. His wife said, wow. I mean, on the kitchen table. And his wife said, wow, that's a pretty cool toy. We should package these and sell these. They took them to Gimbel's department store Thanksgiving week. He had a few hundred of these. They put them in boxes. And then he said, I don't think. They sold out in an hour. And eventually they sold the company for over $100 million because everybody loves a Slinky. And that was 70 years ago. What the Navy said, this is failure. What other people said, that's kind of a dumb, it's a metal spring. But the wife was able to see the creativity in her children's eyes. So, Eric, what some people call failure, that's also why I want that outside party, a coach, a mentor, sometimes a marriage partner. Hopefully your marriage partner is your biggest fan. Hopefully they're able. But for some people, you know, it feels like their marriage partner is their biggest enemy or biggest critic. And I don't think it's because they married the wrong person. I think it's because most people weren't trained about the value of critique to draw out greatness, to draw out greater skill. They were modeled probably by their parents. You know what? You're never going to amount to anything. And that's supposed to motivate. Fear does not motivate. Fear crushes. Fear collapses. Fear destroys. In fact, because I'm a person of faith, the last night that Jesus, the master teacher, was together with his disciples, he knew it was over. He knew it was the last night. They didn't. And he spent hours teaching them about don't be afraid. In the world, you're going to have a hard time.
Yes.
Don't be afraid. And then he also, and you can find this in the Bible, in John chapter 14, 15, 16, 17, he also said, guys, I want you to focus on growing. Right? So here's the principle that I take away. Here's the master teacher saying, you're going to be afraid. It's normal to be afraid, but I want you to keep growing. Don't be afraid. Don't focus on the fear. Focus on the growth. Don't focus on what you can't do.
I love it.
Yeah. Focus on what you can do. And if somebody says, well, how am I going to learn that? Well, I'm surrounded by books. We're here in my library.
Knowledge.
Right? So I can go find a book, a podcast, an audio book. You know, Amazon has Audible. You can find if you have a library card, the most valuable card I carry in my wallet is my library card. It's worth $100 million because Orange County Library, where I live, is one of the best in the United States. And so if I don't have information, here's the fear. Oh, my gosh. And if you just keep focusing on that, you will self-destruct. We've all done it.
Absolutely.
But if I can go from focusing on fear to focusing on growth, personal growth, professional growth, spiritual growth, character growth. If I can grow in my relationships, grow in my networking ability if I'm a small business, because your network equal your net worth. And if somebody's not networking, if they're not well connected, but if a person says, oh my gosh, I'm afraid we don't have enough customers, we don't have enough business. Okay, well, what can we do to grow in that area of you as a leader? Not to say, well, if we just had more money and we could buy better advertising, that's not bad. But if you don't change the leader, the person who's driving the organization, and especially if that leader's fear-based, there's not enough money in the world to fix that person.
You're not going to motivate that.
You can't. And that's why there's so many stories
of
companies that failed because of a scared leader instead of a growing leader. Because if the leader's growing, here's a really exciting thing. Everybody else will follow suit. If the leader's excited, let me tell you a great story. My daughter works as a graphic designer for the Walt Disney Company, and she gets to go do some cool stuff. And she told me that she had a chance to go and tour through where the security dogs for the Walt Disney World in Orlando.
Yes.
And I said, that must have been fantastic. And she said, it was so cool. But here's a psychological principle I took away from it. Because, I mean, these dogs can find, you know, sniff out bombs or drugs or dangerous. Yeah. They're the best of the best of the best.
Sure.
And she said, these dogs work for treats and toys, you know, and she said, they're hardworking dogs. But she said, the trainer said, if the trainer's having an off day and they're just not motivated, well, you know, just my job. But the dog picks up on that. These are very smart dogs, German Shepherds, big Labradors. And the dog picks up on it and it's like, well, you know, if you don't care, well, I don't care. And they said that what they have to do is if somebody's having an off day, not feeling well, something going on in their personal life, they have to put the dog back in the kennel. They have to go outside. They've got to get ramped up because then they come in and they go, hey, boy, guess what? Today we get to go to the Magic Kingdom. Oh, my gosh.
Then he's ready to go. Yeah.
And then the dog picks up on the mood of the handler. And when my daughter's telling me that, she was so excited to tell me, and I was excited for her. But then I thought, man, there's a model from a German Shepherd that would apply to every single business. If the owner, the leader, the manager, if they're not jazzed about it, you don't have enough vitriol, hatred, yelling and fussing at your employees, you'd better get it done, which doesn't work, by the way. It just demotivates. If you come in and you say, if you don't change, I'm firing everybody, that doesn't motivate people. Right. That scares people. Scared people do not do creative work. They can't. That part of their brain will shut down. But if the leader can come in saying, we have a fantastic opportunity to make a difference with our product and our service, and you're part of that. See, that's why I believe so strongly in the field of coaching, and that every leader should be coaching their team. And if a leader says, I don't have time for that stuff, then I think they're probably in the wrong seat.
Don't have time or don't care.
Sometimes it's don't care. And then the other piece, in fairness, it's been my experience, Eric, a lot of the time they've never been trained. They never had a coach. They never had somebody in their life who said, I think you've got greater potential. I wonder how we can pull that potential out. I was on ZD8.3 a few weeks ago talking about setting your child up for greatness in this school year, helping your child realize the potential. And it was one of the most requested things that we've done as far as people saying, can I listen to it again? And people can go to zradio.com and there's, you know, information about here's the principles. But the big takeaway was, if you want to see your child maximize their potential, you look at what they're interested in. Mm-hmm. And when I say, look, you're watching with your eyes, you listen to what they talk about, what keeps them from being bored. Everybody's interested in something, right? So once I find the interest, and it takes some work, especially if a child is younger than five, mm-hmm. but I'm paying attention, what are they interested in? Then I want to practice. I want to do something to kind of draw that out. You can't find somebody's life purpose if you don't know what they're interested in. Curiosity, Brian Grazer wrote a fantastic book called A Curious Mind. It was a bestseller a few years ago. And in it, there are hundreds of questions to draw out what people are interested in. It's a yeah. great book for managers and leaders because they're able to have the strategic question mm-hmm. to draw out of that person what motivates. The research tells us that maybe one third of American workers go to a job that they're really interested in and a good fit that they enjoy, which means two thirds, they're just trying to make rent. Yeah.
They're just going through the motions.
And some of those people, it's not because they're lazy. It's not because they're bad or broken. It's not because they're toxic or terrible. People like to, you know, to label. They like to shame in today's world. Many times it's because they were never trained. They never had somebody come alongside and say, let's find out what you're most interested
really
in.
Them. Guide
yeah,
them
exactly.
to the journey.
And to be able to draw that out, that's the practice piece. What are you interested in? That's the motivator. Mm-hmm. And then the practice piece is to say, let's develop that a little bit. And that is a trial and error process.
Sure.
And being able to give people room to fail, because you don't learn when things are going really well. Mm-hmm. You don't learn in comfort. Companies and products do not get better in comfort.
Lean into challenges.
Yeah. You get better and you develop character. And companies and products get better when there's a fail point. And we can learn from the fail point instead of pretend that it's not there.
Well, and I'll make one other point. As parents, Jen and I had a conversation similar to this the other night when your kids are maybe misbehaving or something's going on.
Yeah, they're your child.
We looked at each other and I said, well, probably figured out something was going on with us. And it's yeah. amazing when the leader, you know, as a parent or as a business owner, they can really project that situation to everybody, you know, that they're under
yeah.
or what have you. So it's a big deal.
Kids pick up on moods of their parents and then they replicate that. So when the parents say, oh my gosh, this kid's so terrible. Yeah. You know, everybody's got to grow. You know, you got to grow. I got to grow. All God's children got to grow.
Yeah.
But being able to look at that and figure out, I wonder where that came from. You know, we're not inborn with, you know, I'm going to do this to tick my mom off or freak my dad out. And that's where, as a social researcher, as a behavioral specialist, of just watching behavior, sometimes listening to words, but mostly watching behavior, because behavior will not lie. It's an indicator of what's going on in the heart at the character level. And that's where you get transformational change. When I see somebody who says, you know, life has just been unkind and unfair and I'm just not lucky. And, you know, they've got kind of the Eeyore effect from the Winnie the Pooh series. Remember, Eeyore was like, you know, I guess I'll never be anything.
Right.
And that series became so popular because it reflected the four primary personalities. You've got Tigger, the really loud, extroverted person. And some people are really loud and extroverted. They don't see a problem and they get in trouble because they don't see problems. Then you got the Eeyore
plowing through everybody.
Yeah, they just, you know, it's like, you know, we'll just dive in. We, you know, we don't have the capital. We don't have the staff.
We'll fix it later.
Yeah, that's right. You know, just you know, launch the rocket and maybe, you know, hope it'll get there. And hope's not a strategy. Mm-hmm. And they're different characters, but the Winnie the Pooh character reflects the phlegmatic personality, the high S on the DISC scale. And that's the majority of the people in the United States. Almost 70% of people just have that easygoing personality. They don't like conflict. They hate it. They like to get along with people. Mm-hmm. They're not super motivated to go out and challenge the world, but they are super motivated by relationship.
Right.
And deep levels of relationship. Because if I'm going every day to a job and I feel beat up, I'm eventually going to change. Mm-hmm. You know, once I get enough money to say, I don't have to work here because I'm making enough rent money, I'm going to go to another company. Mm-hmm. But if I'm going to a place that's highly relational, a place that's investing in me as a person, training, equipping, coaching, providing tools and resources. Mm-hmm. And if I go to a place where I know, you know what? Everybody here really likes me. We get along. I don't like the word family because it's work, but I do like the old theme song from the TV show Cheers. Sometimes you want to go to a place where everybody knows your name and everybody's problems are the same. Everybody's glad you came. Hey, it's good to see you.
Yeah.
The TV show The Office with Steve Carell was kind of a joke.
Love that one.
Yeah, I mean, we all laughed because he didn't have family, so his employees became his family, and it was just like a big dysfunctional pattern. But when I can see I'm going to a place, I'm part of a team, because one of us is not as smart as all of us, I'm part of a team and we're pushing forward to make the world a little bit better place. When I'm able to do that, I'm excited to get up in the morning. I'm excited to be part of something that's greater than me. And I think that when we add that kind of value, the marketplace will come back and say, this is valuable. That's how you create a sustainable business. It's the intrinsic value inside and being able to implement that through our team to the marketplace, and the marketplace saying, this is valuable. Give me some more of that.
Every time I sit down with you, I'm blown. My mind's just, you've got so much good information, Dwight. You've gone down a great journey. You've experienced a lot of things in life. And one thing you touched on briefly a minute ago that I want to go back to real quick is gratitude.
Yeah.
Just how important gratitude is, and really gratitude toward things that aren't good. And how do you find, and that's one thing I've been trying to do, is when things aren't good, saying thank you for that because of, thank you that I was in traffic this morning because it gave me a few more minutes to reflect on life or whatever. But looking at the bad and bringing good out of that and trying to practice that more in life. But around gratitude, what is what is your thought? What are you practicing?
So we're sitting here in my library, right? It's back to school time in the United States. So I went to Staples. These, you know, they mark these down to 50 cents. So I got a whole bunch of them. Because when I'm talking to somebody who's discouraged, beat up, you know, life, and I literally, I give them this and I say, I want you to write down five things every day you're thankful for, good or bad. And you're right, because Eric, the things I don't like, I'm not going to call them bad. They're inconveniences.
Sure.
Traffic.
Sure.
Gives me a few more minutes instead of trying to race through a yellow light, put my life, other people's lives in jeopardy, to say yellow light. Okay, let me slow down. I listen to a lot of audiobooks. And it means, oh, I can get through another chapter. Now, it wasn't always that way until I understood the power of gratitude. Just about every single bad thing in a relationship, a business, you can track back to if you're looking for what's the one thing. Well, somewhere along the path, somebody wasn't grateful, thankful, appreciative. When customers say, thank you, man, that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
In some types of social media where, you know, the people are kind of ragging and hating. But when somebody says, you know, you guys are doing the best you can. essentially customer service is about saying thank you for your business.
And that rises above the noise.
It really does.
The negativity. And
had a bad meal, but you know what? My wife and I had a bad experience at an Olive Garden. You know, it's like, it was almost like a comedy of errors, everything that could go wrong. And it took 2 hours, right? And I shared my thoughts because that company's based in Orlando, mm-hmm. not with anybody at the headquarters. I just shared my thoughts on social media. And I posted, here's the experience you can look forward to at this location. It wasn't maybe an hour. And the company said, we messed up. Send me back a message. You know, here's some coupons. Please give us a second chance. And I thought, I'm not going to get snake bit twice. But we were on that side of town. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I went back, did not tell them who I was, just right. went back and said, let's see if anything changed. And some of the things that I had critiqued.
Your suggestions, yeah.
Right? You know, I think you guys would do better if you do this, were implemented. Now, I didn't get credit for it. But I had a great meal with my wife.
Neither one of us are getting paid by Olive Garden.
Yeah, no, that's right. This is not about the Olive Garden. And if somebody's paid to be able to, then okay, they've got skin in the game. But I just wanted, you know, a better experience with my wife mm-hmm. and a nice meal in a simple environment. And we accomplished that the second time. And it was really impressive to me because it said somewhere that manager took information, you know, a bad day.
They listened.
And they took that information and they made some changes. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's going through a financially hard time and they're writing down, I'm thankful that I haven't always had a financially hard time. I'm thankful that this financial challenge, it's going to make me pay more attention to, do I really want that $6 latte? Or do I need to pay attention to a little more Dave Ramsey stuff of, you know what? I need to get on the cash system. The more I'm able to look at everything, a quick story, a friend of mine, Pat Williams, co-founder of the Orlando Magic. Pat was diagnosed with multiple myeloma cancer almost 7 years ago. And he's been cancer-free for 6 years, completely unheard of. He had stem cell replacement, did chemo, did radiation, did noni juice, did everything you can think of. And his body healed. Really, really rare. Very unusual for somebody with that type of bone cancer and blood cancer. Mm. To be able to not only still be alive, but to be 100% cancer free.
Wow.
And Pat told me, I asked him about it, and he said, you know, if I had it to do again, he said, I don't want this to sound, you know, inappropriate, but he said, I'm thankful for the cancer. Mm. Because he said, the cancer makes me appreciate every day. He said, I'm cancer free. He said, but the cancer's given me the boldness. He's a person of faith. He said, on the Today Show or ESPN or with the New York Times, to when people say, Pat Williams, how did you get through this? He said, I believe in the power of prayer. The mission was remission, and I believe that we prayed, and I was healed. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm still here, you know, 6 years later. And he said, even though cancer is catastrophic, he said, so many painful problems, but that very painful thing forced growth.
He looked at it as a gift.
He was able to look at it and to be able to find. Remember, we talked about the importance of here's fear mm-hmm. and here's growth. So we would call a catastrophe, a bankruptcy, some type of serious health problem. I would call that forced growth. Sometimes when I talk about my own story, I had a heart attack 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that a heart attack saved my life because the heart attack, I didn't know I had any, you know, that coronary artery disease.
Right.
I didn't know I had, you know, nobody in my family had ever had that. I didn't even think about it when people would say, I don't think I'd eat that bacon double cheeseburger. I don't think it's good for you. Nobody in my family has ever had this. Exactly.
Who'd I eat bacon?
I'll be fine. Give me some more bacon. Put extra bacon, right? Kind of, you know, mocking the fates.
Sure, sure.
And I was running. In fact, I was on my way to Afghanistan and Iraq as a guest of the Army, the Department of Defense, to go and work with troops during the surge of 2006 and 2007. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally running around the world, save the babies, save the whales, save, help, go, do. And I wasn't paying attention to health. I didn't have routines. I remember the night before that heart attack, I was doing an interview by computer, you know, sending information back and forth to a journalist in New York for a news story the next day. And I remember vividly, I've got to get 4 hours of sleep before I start my Friday. And it happened on a Friday morning, October 27th. Mm. And I can remember thinking, okay, I'm only going to get 3.5 hours of sleep tonight, but it'll be fine because I was living that period of my life on 4 hours, maybe 5 hours of sleep, 7 days a week. Mm. And you know what? If you keep working a pump, the pump will wear out.
Or machines, right?
Or a machine. Yeah. I mean, it's a pump. And if you abuse that, I didn't have routines. And so a heart attack saved my life because I was able to instead of kind of run and gun, do what culture says, bigger, better, go do, you know, be here, be there, be everywhere. Instead of trying to be a super person rescuing people, and that was my own psychological baggage. And I got sucked into a lot of things. 6 months of cardio rehab. First, I get a second chance. Half of the guys that have a heart attack don't. And then that 6 months of not being able to work, function for almost 3 months, I couldn't drive a car because it was just too traumatic and too anxiety producing. It revved my heart up too much to be in Orlando traffic. I mean, it was just, and so it saved my life because everything broke. So when I write down, you know, something I'm thankful for, I remember October 27th. It's easy to remember. It's my grandmother's birthday. And I remember on that day, here's the way I used to live. And here's the way now that I've learned. You have to get enough sleep. You have to wake up in the morning, have a healthy breakfast. You have to have a quiet meditative time. Deep breathing. Some people, just that's breathe. Yoga.
Yeah,
just breathe.
Yeah.
But deep breathing, really being able to slow things down. Life is a journey, but if I'm racing, kind of circling back to that creative idea, you will not do your best creative work if you're jacked up on caffeine and carbs and you're desperately trying to beat the clock to get something submitted by midnight. You'll turn in desperate work, and it'll look like desperate work, but it won't be your best work.
Right.
And it's because of missing out on some daily disciplines, some core daily routines. And when you do that, it's called neuroplasticity. Your brain will start to create pathways, and you'll be shocked not only at how much better you feel, but how much better your quality of work is. And the great news is you'll live a little longer to enjoy the process.
Well, I think, not to belabor this, but meditation and the practice of quiet time and breathing, through what I've read and the people I've talked to, I think that's going to be, or is, on the verge of being the next big thing. You know, there were the gyms, and then if you look at food, there were smoothies, frozen yogurt. But meditation, that's still practiced in the East. And there's certain channels in Far East that air that on cable throughout the day. And I'll just mention that I started using an app called Headspace.
I've heard of that.
For people that, what is meditation? How do you do it? And it's for the novice, and then it helps you grow into, this is the practice of meditation. And so much it is just breathing, but also just setting things aside and not waking up to chaos, not waking up to email or the news or social media.
Oh, I'm glad you said that.
Waking up and just having space in your head.
So Juliette Funt wrote a book called White Space, right? She is the CEO of a company called White Space, and the concept behind it is to be able to create some calm in your life instead of running and panting and just racing and trying to get to another 100 emails before the day. And what she's found, and it's a fantastic book, if people have a chance to pick it up or go to her website, whitespace.com, is that big companies that do creative work, Google, Microsoft, have meditative pods where you can go, it's quiet, it's dark, and you say, well, this is religious. Not at all. This isn't anything religious. This is to be able to, at a deep spiritual level, almost at a cellular level, it's for your brain and your body to come into alignment. That's when you get your best work. But you have to do that on a predictable daily pattern. To be able to say, I'm going to go to a yoga class once a year, that's like saying I'm going to go get a massage once a year. Mm-hmm. It's not bad, but it didn't really change much. If I'm able to line up my beliefs with my body through certain daily rituals, breathing being the most powerful. When I'm dealing with somebody that's facing a bankruptcy or they've just been downsized, laid off, if I can get them to breathe, we can get through it.
Yeah.
And then once they're breathing and calmed down a little bit, getting that cortisol level down, the adrenaline level down, getting them to calm down. Now we can creatively think about options. Okay, so you got a certified letter from the IRS. Let's think about our options. I remember one executive I was coaching, certified letter, IRS, you know, kind of like, here's everything. And he was overwhelmed. He went back, checked with his CPA. Something had been not filed properly 2 years earlier. Anyway, fast forward, he got a refund. But instead of freaking out with the certified mail, let's calm down and let's figure it out. Not freak out, figure out. And what he figured out was, this isn't right. I paid my taxes. Something hadn't been filed properly. He gets money back with an apology letter from the IRS. Who gets that? And so the more I'm able to look at, we'll call them best practices of big companies, really successful companies. Microsoft, when the iPod, when the iTouch came out, Microsoft had a MP3 music player that was really pretty.
Yeah.
Wouldn't play iTunes, and it eventually failed. But Simon Sinek, the author of Start With Why, the TED Talker, tells a great story. He said he had spoken at both companies within a year.
Yeah.
And he said he spoke at Microsoft first, and they gave him one of these, you know, Zoom units. And he said it was pretty, it was beautiful. It wouldn't play anything, but he said it was really cool. And then he said, and I spoke at Apple when the iTouch came out. And he said it was interesting because the Apple people, he said, I've got a Zoom. The Apple people were, that's great. He said, but I know if I told the Microsoft people that I've got an iTouch, they would have said, let me see it. Because he said Microsoft was competing to try to be better than Apple. Apple was saying, how can I create something that's going to help the end user?
Yeah, they were always concerned about the user.
Right. I'm not worried about my competition. Mm-hmm. Let's focus on how can I make an experience better? How can I make music portable? And they did that, and they own the market. But it's because, you know, the best practice, how can I make this better for my customer? How can I make this better for my clients? How can I make this experience better? When I do that, instead of competing against a number of a competitor, now you're in the zone with the great ones. That business is sustainable. The people that work there are happy. The only thing that they need is some creative why to keep them juiced on the journey.
How do we add value, right? How do I add value into your experience?
Yeah.
The Orlando, the Central Florida community at what we thought was just a community thing that happened last year and the tragedy at Pulse ended up reshaping the way we look at things as a nation, as a world. And then we fast forward to 2017, August 2017, and just the political uproar and the beliefs that people have and how just the anger in people. I want you to share with us, because you, to build some more, you've mentioned coaching. You are a coach.
Mm-hmm.
You've helped in crisis situations. So a couple of things to talk about. One, last year, your involvement with Pulse, and this year, looking back after it's been a year, and then the things that we continue to go through. So if you're telling somebody, you know, that fear, we can't operate in this mode of fear, but yet we've got all these things going on around us. How do we operate that? How do we work in that time where we reflect that we're thankful that we work together and we're on a creative team, but yet we still have to worry about our kids. We still have to worry about ourselves when we go to events, when we just go out to dinner, when we're in the airport. You know, so what are some of the conversations you're having with people around that?
The Pulse shooting in June of 2016 redefined Orlando, and to a large degree redefined going out for an evening with some friends to a birthday party. My daughter works at Disney, my son at Universal, so they'd been invited to Pulse many times because it was a popular place for birthday parties and gathering. Just a simple place. It was not downtown Orlando. Parking was easy. But when we look back to when that event happened, it redefined culture because it showed something that's always been there. Violence in this country has been on the upswing. School shootings, church shootings, mall shootings, what some people in law enforcement call soft targets, because nobody's there to be able to fight back. And that was kind of the worst of people, to be able to see someone who singled out the Latino community, the LGBTQ community, to be able to say, I'm going to make a statement. And he did. We saw the worst of people on that night in June. And for the last over a year, we've seen the best of people, at least in the Orlando area, of communities coming together like they had never done before, of being able to say, you're my neighbor, and I'm so sorry about your loss. Mm-hmm. We've seen a tremendous coming together in the faith community, the business community, of people that didn't know their neighbors' names, saying, what can I do to help? There were lines wrapped around buildings of people saying, I'm going to give blood and bottled water. So we saw the worst of people that night. And then now for over a year, we've seen the best of people saying, this is my hometown. And yet, here we are in a very politically charged climate. In the last few weeks, we've seen people just protesting. We've got to take down statues that have been there for 100 years. And what I know just about human character, Eric, we can take down every statue and it won't change people at the character level.
Their heart.
Yeah, it won't change their heart. All right, so if I take all the history books and I rip out all of the pages about the atrocities done to Native Americans, it doesn't change that it happened. And if I rip it all out, it doesn't change people's hearts. It rips some pages out of a history book, but it doesn't change people at the character level, what some people would call the soul level. So when I look at the horrors of a school shooting, a workplace shooting, and tragically, the most likely place statistically you'll be shot with a handgun is at work by a former employee. We saw it almost to a year to the day from the Pulse shooting, a few miles from this office right here where we're recording, of an employee who'd been fired with cause. He'd been fired because he punched another employee. He'd been warned multiple times, and they fired him. So he came back 2 months later and killed 6 people and himself. The most likely place you'll be shot is at work by a former coworker. And you think, that's kind of scary. Yeah, that's why I'm so passionate about wanting people to love their work. Because if somebody just every day hates what they do, eventually that hatred will build up and it will lead to some violent act, either against themselves, suicide, slow suicide, drug, alcohol addiction, or homicide. Now, it's scary that all of those numbers have increased. The highest increase in violent crime is called filicide, and it's somebody who kills their marriage partner, their spouse, their life partner, and kills their children at home in their, you know, in the children's bedroom. If I'm a little kid, my bedroom should be the safest place in the world, not the place I'm murdered by my mom or murdered by my dad. And you think, what is going on? There's a lot going on inside of people, and I want everybody watching to know, if you can talk through it, you can get through it. If you can talk through it, you can get through it. And I want people having conversations. Is this workplace safe? Is our church service safe? Is it safe to go to a concert? And the answer is yes. But you have to pay attention.
Awareness.
Yeah, well, that's it.
Yeah.
If we lived in Cali, Colombia, Bogota, Colombia, if we lived in Syria, you would watch your back when you went out to dinner. If you went to a concert in Cairo, you know, I've seen the light show at the pyramids, the nighttime laser light show. But if you went there now, you'd watch your surroundings. Okay. Orlando, Central Florida, my hometown, you never had to pay attention to your surroundings. And now you do. And people say, oh, it shouldn't be that way. Agreed. But it is that way. And if I'm able to pay attention to having an awareness about safety, then I can solve it ahead of time. I can solve problems ahead of time.
It's interesting you say that. So yeah, what I'm hearing is that we can't change events,
right?
But we can change responses,
right?
And we can produce better outcomes.
We can produce better outcomes, but with some things on the front end, you know, if we took something, you know, tragic and we put it into the terms of a business, it's been my experience because I work with a lot of closely held family businesses, and never do they collapse without there having been warning signs that everybody knew about years in advance. But nobody talked about.
I was in a family business and there were never challenges.
Right? Till it all blows up. Right? And so if I can get people talking through it about safety, or talking through it about sustainability, or talking through, wow, here's what we need to be paying attention to because our biggest customer, you know, is kind of making some rumbling that they may jump to a competitor. If I can get people talking through it instead of panicking and being fear-based, or sticking their head in the sand or saying, let's just all not think about it. You know, let's all go get pizza. If I can get people talking through a problem, you will get a better outcome. You know, somebody says, will there be another big Pulse shooting? Not in Central Florida, because people are aware. People are paying attention. Not just law enforcement, but people. Remember, the terrorist attacks of 9/11, and I worked on a team that worked at Ground Zero in New York City. It only took 3 planes hitting things until the fourth plane, the people on the plane said, not on my plane, right? Plane hits Tower 1, plane hits the Pentagon, plane hits Tower 2. And on that fourth plane,
we're not going to let this happen.
Right. Mm-hmm. Todd Beamer, who had been a college athlete, the plane, that fourth plane taken over by hijackers, that plane was flying low enough that cell phones worked. And his wife called him and said, something terrible is happening, because he'd flown out of Boston's Logan Airport. And she said, here's what's happening. 37 passengers. They were in the back. Terrorists are in the front. Two terrorists flying the plane, one guarding the door. 37 passengers in the back. Lisa said, my husband had everybody come up with a plan. Mm-hmm. And then the plan, we're going to take the beverage cart. We're going to get hot water. We're going to take this plane back. Mm-hmm. And then they, after they had the plan, they voted on the plan. It was unanimous. We're going to take the plane back. And then they held hands and said the Lord's Prayer. And Todd said those classic words, let's roll. And Lisa said, that was the last thing I ever heard my husband say, because he had the phone on speaker. I heard yelling and shouting and screaming. But it only took three planes until Americans said, this has got to change, and it changes on my plane. Mm-hmm. Yes, they still died, but they saw a problem, and they took...
They made a quick decision.
And they took action. Mm-hmm. And I think whether it be in business or life or safety or parenting or a marriage that's in crisis, almost always we can see, man, this is not good, right? So let's get some outside help, maybe a coach, maybe a mentor, maybe a trusted family member. But to be able to talk through it, develop a plan, implement that plan, and many times you can get a better outcome. And even if it's still a painful outcome, even if a relationship fails, you won't see the hatred. You won't see people going to war. When you think about divorce, you know, this person says, I don't want to be married to this person. Or in business, this business partner says, I don't want to be with this business partner. That doesn't have to cost $1 million of legal fees. There's a way to say, we can't work together. But if somebody says, I want to prove something, there's some psychological agendas going on, then it may cost, you know, literally $1 million.
Right.
To prove a point. What was the point? That they had some baggage, they had some character issues, there was something else going on inside. And if you can get to the something, you can change the outcome. If I can't get to the something with a person, at least I can contain it so it doesn't create as much damage. The worst thing that people can do is to do nothing in a time of major change. Because if you do nothing, it'll blow up, and then
shut
all you
down,
have.
Isolate yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much good information. I've really enjoyed the time we've had together.
Me too.
I really have.
Me too.
So we talked about action. So if you only had a brief period of time to tell somebody, in your history of working with people, with businesses, what would be one thing, one piece of advice you would tell them to take action on today? What can they do today? Because, you know, we might be facing a lot of different challenges or a lot of struggles going on in our personal life, but what can we do today to say, hey, I'm going to make myself better to inspire the greatness that I truly believe is somewhere inside of me? What's going to bring that passion out? What can I activate?
Five words. You can get through it. You can get through it. Max Lucado, the pastor in San Antonio, wrote a book called You'll Get Through It. And when I read that book a couple of years ago, it was powerful to me, because I thought, that's basically what I do. I help people who are in a crisis. I remind them, you will get through this. You know what? It's a crisis. Let's get some counseling supports. Let's get some structure. Let's get some routines and some patterns. If it's a plateau, they're bored, they're in the comfort zone, they're not maximizing their potential, their life has no meaning or no purpose, there's no deep satisfaction about what they do, then it's coaching to come alongside. You'll get through this. You know, there's something on the other side, but let's get through this. If I only had one message to give to your viewers, you'll get through this. Sometimes you need a coach. Sometimes you need a counselor. Sometimes you need, you know, to sit down with a legal pad and map things out. But you'll get through it. What you can't do is nothing. What you can't do is sit and live afraid. You know what? I'm just going to shut my mind off, and tonight I'm going to go through a bottle of Merlot, and then I'll fall asleep, and it'll be better tomorrow. Mm. No, it won't. You'll get through it, but you have to take some strategic action. You have to, and we all have gaps. You got gaps. I got gaps. Everybody's got gaps. In the classic movie, Rocky Balboa won the Academy Award in 1976. Rocky yells or says to Adrian, "You got gaps. I got gaps. We both got gaps, but together we fill each other's gaps, yo." And it's kind of a cheesy line, you know, 30 years before.
So you're everybody's complete Mick.
I just want people to know you can get through it. You know, the old Beatles song, you'll get by with a little help from your friends. Yeah, but you have to face it. You have to own it. You have to take responsibility. You have to be able to say, we need to make some big changes. But when you can acknowledge that, you're 50% toward the answer. And you're on your way toward getting through it. Because if you face it, you can get through it. I believe that.
Awesome. Dwight Bain, everybody. Thanks again, Dwight. Great first episode of Activate. I look forward to continuing this positive message to other viewers. So thanks again, Dwight.
Wow, what a very inspiring message. Dwight always has some practical steps on how you can take action now to achieve your goals and create the best life. Make sure you also check out EnglishEric.com for other creative, branding, and personal growth resources. And again, I'm grateful you spent some time with me today.